Kia ora, tā alofa, hi and welcome to episode 12 of Tanerumanga's Team Talk. Proudly sponsored by Victual, New Zealand's first health and wellbeing supplement that combines ancient Māori and Pacifica wisdom and ingredients. And this week, we have a guest host, something a little bit different, who will help to interview me as I'll be talking a little bit about my my pathways through my life and through rugby and you know, just recently into business. And so no big intro, other than to say that I've played a bit of rugby, coached a bit of rugby, and now I'm learning about business after starting up Victual with my wife, Rochelle. So I'd like to introduce our social media creator, Merle Manueli, who will take over as our interviewer to help me along. So Merle, welcome, and I'll hand it over to you. How are you feeling?
Thanks, T. Do you know what? I'll actually just quickly point out, you're the first person in a very, very long time who's actually pronounced my last name correctly.
Oh.
Yeah, so back in the island, everyone used to pronounce it Manueli, but naturally, you know, being in your environment, everyone says Manueli. So, yeah, no, when you said it, I was like, he nailed it. it's honestly an honour, not only getting to host you and, you know, interview for your last episode of the season, but even just getting to learn and grow with you and Rochelle on the business these last few months. Looking at the date, we're a few weeks out from the wrapping up 2021. How's the year been so far?
Yeah, it's been different.
Bit full on, little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, bit full on. You know, started off with a bit of rugby, my comfort zone, and you know, a bit of my passion, and then we've finished in learning about business and lockdown, second lockdown. You know, that was pretty tough. So yeah, a bit of a roller coaster, really. I think everyone would call it that. It's probably not one this last lockdown, I probably didn't thrive as much as I thought as I would have liked, like I did in the first one. You know, it's pretty much really just surviving.
How did you find that first lockdown?
That first lockdown, yeah. And last year, that was, I loved that.
Oh, yeah.
I did thrive in that one, you know.
Bit of a bit of a holiday mode there.
It was very much so. I enjoy staying home. So when you spend a lot of time away, it was good to be home. And yeah, just, you know, looked after myself. It was good to have the family around. And it was pretty funny actually, because my kids struggled a little bit being at home all the time. I thrived, and just went straight into holiday mode. And I had a bit of a health peak around then too. I lost a bit of weight and went that way.
A bit too much exercise, but
yeah. But you know what? I had a lot of time in my hands and got a lot of sleep, and then fast forward to this recent one where I think everything flipped.
I struggled. Quickly, what, you know, you mentioned that you really enjoyed it, you know, in comparison to your kids. Because I mean, you know, I think everyone has their own experience of lockdown, you know, and it's a relative and situational thing. What? Why do you think you enjoyed it? Because I feel like the bulk majority didn't.
No.
But
look, I enjoy home's my sanctuary, you know, home's where I go to relax and get away from everything. You know, it's the one place where I feel I can just, you know, be myself and, you know, not always on show. You know, having been in that, in my previous job with the Blues and always being away, or, you know, always out, you know, just like everyone, I think you go to work, you know, come back. And so being at home, and you know, we couldn't do anything, so you kind of knew how long we were settling in for. So I just took advantage of it and just really enjoyed myself. I think, like, thinking back then, you knew we were going to get out of lockdown at some stage, and you know, we're just worrying about, you know, pay cuts and things like that. I think a lot of people, you know, jobs, we were pretty fortunate that all we did was, you know, we got a We got a reduction in our wages, which, you know, which was fine, and but we still had, you know, money coming in, you know, and that's, you know, some others didn't have that. And as I said before, you know, we fast forward to now where a lot of uncertainty, because I'd changed jobs, and all the plans that we had leading into this last lockdown were thrown out the window because you couldn't go anywhere. So that was, you know, that was the difference for me. And there was no plans that I could count on, or, you know, there was no certainty what was going to happen outside of after the lockdown, or even during the lockdown, you know, because we just jumped into a whole new world, a whole new environment for me, which was around, you know, starting off a business.
You know what, one of the things that came up during Dr. Farah Palmer's interview, and I think I did a little snippet of it on our top page as well, and I really, really loved it. You know, she put that comparison that when you're younger, you know, you got a lot less to lose. And, you know, one of those biggest challenges that you'd face, you know, choosing to stay in your comfort zone and something that you're excelling and doing well, and you've been doing well and for the last how many decades, and choosing to start from scratch and, you know, go into the unknown. It's not an easy decision to make. And, you know, like for a lot of people, what do you think kind of finally pushed you? Because, I mean, I think at the beginning you only went in part time, you know, you were trying to do coaching and then helping with Rochelle, you know, with the business. What was that final push that, you know, you decided, oh, let's go all in for this?
I think, again, just for us and for me, it's probably, you know, I've always worked for someone. I keep saying it, you know, as a player, you're beholden to the coach. As a coach, you're beholden to the, you know, to an extent, the players as well as the board and your results. And, you know, it's a little bit different as a player because, well, I don't know if it is, but, you know, at least you get to go out there and you can have a say. You know, you get to actually, you know, have a physical say out there because, you know, you can put it all out there and it's up to your performance that, you know, that'll really dictate if you get picked or not. As a coach, it's to a point, you know, you can, from after the game to before the game, you know, that's when you have control, and then all of a sudden to an element of control. And then, you know, when it comes to game day, you know, you've got to rely and trust that you've done the work exactly, you know, but you don't have any physical say on actually what happens on that day. So that's, you know, from that point of view and some of the experiences I've had, you know, and I thought, well, this is an opportunity for us to actually, you know, have a bit of freedom for ourselves. You know, you get a bit of freedom to decide whether you want to do things on your terms. And also, look, I just think it was a good opportunity, like, to branch out into something that could be ours, you know, that, like, something tangible that we can say, well, we started that, we built that from nothing. And, you know, we have done that. But again, we've got to put the work, putting the work in to be successful.
It must be hard though, you know, like for going for so long, you know, kind of, you know, I think at every step you get a bit more freedom, you get a bit more, you know, opportunity, but then all of a sudden you get all reins, you know. Was it hard, especially at the beginning, trying to find your feet in terms of what that freedom looked and felt like?
Yes. Yeah. Like you say, I became an experienced coach, and fortunate that with the coaches I was with in the end, like with Leon McDonald, and, you know, as our head coach, he gave me a lot of leeway to run my area the way I wanted to do it, you know, and we had discussions and it was great. But in the end, he trusted me to deliver what he wanted, obviously, but in a way that I thought was best for us, you know, and the group that we had. You know, and that's what you want, I think. You know, you just wanted to be given a bit of trust. And so, I was very comfortable in that. You know, it's something that I was brought up, I've known for more than half my life in terms of rugby. And then, like you said, leaving all that behind and jumping into something totally different. Yeah, it was tough to make the decision. When I finally made the decision, it was great. You know, I'm definitely in it now. And then when lockdown hit, it kind of spun everything on its head, you know, and it was a real anxious time for me because it was probably at a time where I'd already kind of come to put things in place, and I thought we had a plan in place where we were going to travel around.
You know what? Let's retract.
It's never too late. I think I've learned it's never too late to back out. You know, sometimes, hey, look, what I've learned, and I got told a long time ago, and, you know, I think you mentioned before, like, I've always been a provider. I love that role within my family, and you know, that responsibility, and it's something that my parents passed on to me. You know, to work, you know, work for your family, provide for them, provide for your children, and but then when I couldn't do that as such, when I think especially as lockdown came, it kind of, you know, took my how would you say, you know, like who I was, you know, that was the one job that I loved doing, you know, kind of thing. It was the kind of purpose of what got me up in the during the day, and, you know, and trying to strive to be the best I can be. And, you know, it's sometimes you hang on to those things but too much. And as I said, you know, I was taught that, you know, like, you make decisions, but you can't eat pride. Your family can't eat pride. So sometimes you've just got to backtrack and say, oh, look, you know, I made a mistake. I've got to do this. And you know, because, again, you know, in the end, I've got to put food on the table, clothes on our back, and things like that. And so, you know, in that initial stage, there was thoughts about, oh, my gosh, lockdown, you know, all our plans out there.
What have I done?
Wow, should I better ring someone. I might need another job, you know, go back to my, you know, see if my old job was available. But I think we stuck it out. My wife said, like, let's just stick it out. And it was real crash course in terms of what I needed to know around our business, a real crash course. And
pressure cooker.
Yeah. And I think, you know, lockdown was a bit of a godsend for that because I had nowhere else to go. So
I had, run away from them.
No, and I'm very good at that. I says, oh, look, I've just got to go out and see someone, you know, and go.
I think everyone, you know.
I think I'm just going to go
like
for
that.
A walk. Yeah,
everyone's, you know, like that, and that's where that procrastination comes in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's natural. Like, I get what you mean. Like, you know, if you just, you have no choice but to just sit there and be like, okay, well, it's got to get done. You can't avoid it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and then also, you know, look, we also, as a couple, for, you know, Rochelle and I, and our husband and wife, we were now 24/7 joined at the hip, you know, which we'd never done before. You know, I was used to go, you know, for so long, and we're just locked in. She'd been doing the all the heavy lifting in terms of our business up until that moment. Now, to be honest, she still does, but at least I've got a bit of I give her a bit of a hand now, and I get an understanding. But it just kind of dawned on me how much work I'd kind of left to her while I was, you know, coaching. And, you know, the plan was that we'd be doing it together, yet I'd kind of just left that all to her. I thought, oh, yeah, you know, she'd ask me things. I says, yep, that's fine, whatever you think. You know, so I was just kind of abdicating it to her. And then lockdown, yeah, it was just a crash course and everything. And then, as I said before, and I'm sure everyone went through it, there were some real anxious times around learning. And if I did, you know, information overload about, you know, business or social media, which is why we brought you on, because we just couldn't get it.
even I'm in a learning position.
You know, but again, you know, it's an understanding of that. You can try and do it, or if you can, you know, you bring someone that can do it. And I think that's what we're learning also. You know, it's all right to have an idea, but sometimes you need experts in areas. And, you know, I've learned that through my rugby life as well. But it was, you know, tough, you know, geez, how long we were there? 6 weeks, or even longer. Geez, it was heaps longer than that, wasn't it? But it was really intense. And even now, you know, we're kind of to a stage, obviously, before Christmas and New Year's, you know, not a lot of people are really thinking about their health and well-being leading into Christmas. So, you know, making a plan for next year around our business, and, you know, trying to hit that hard, you know, that's what we're focusing on. I think, you know, you know, we talk around a lot around, we hear a lot around health and well-being, you know, mental health and all that. You know, it's, I suppose when you get in those situations, you do get times when your mind starts wandering. And I talk about that all the time with players, you know.
Mm.
We got to mind where our mind goes, because, you know, sometimes it can trick us into thinking things are worse than they are or better than they are. You know, we've really got to try and control what we can control and that what we can't. You know, you just go, oh, well, next time, or tried my best, but don't get down on yourself, you know, because you be doing what you're doing is still better than not doing anything, you know. And I think there was a lot of those lessons that I've probably passed on to other players that I was kind of using for myself.
Do you do that thing where, as you're explaining something to someone, you start, you know, thinking out loud, and then you actually start saying things that you didn't realize, but only until you actually say, you're like, oh yeah, oh, you know, that sounds about right.
I'm not too sure. You know, look, I'm very big. I can only teach what I know. And if I don't know, I won't teach it, because I don't have a deep understanding of it. Mm. And so I teach a lot from my experiences. Mm. You know, I have learnt a lot from other people, but I also have learnt most through doing. You know, that's how I learn.
Yeah,
you know, and that's probably for the groups that I've been involved with. I think that's what resonates with them, because they can see that I've, you know, oh yeah, he's done it. So there's, you know, there's a bit of integrity and a bit of respect for that.
Mm.
Yet that's not the only thing. It's also having an understanding that, you know, we learn from making mistakes, and we need to make, but also we've got to make sure that from a training point of view, that's where we make our mistakes. It's,
yep.
You know, we want to make our mistakes there. So that's what training's about. You know, I keep saying that all the time. So, man, this is where we make all the mistakes, so we don't make them on Saturday, and, you know, or we minimize them. And if, you know, we do make mistakes in the weekend, then look, let's see why we did that. You know, is it, you know, how was your preparation? You know, you go through everything around, you know, what was your build up? You know, did you do the same routine or all the things, or just, you know, did the moment get to you? And if it did, well, let's be honest, and well, how can we learn from it? You know, like, that's probably my take on those things. So, yeah, look, you know, I think, like I said, I go back to what I know. I can only teach what I know. And that's probably what I think the boys like about, you know, I don't watch things on YouTube and say, oh, yeah, I can teach that, when I don't know the detail of it.
But it's actually funny that you say that, because even like growing up, because Daddy always used to love watching rugby as well, and I like would watch like a big final session. I was like, what's the real difference between these teams? And he used to say to me, like, you know, when it comes to like a big final, it's not actually about who's better. It's actually about who makes less mistakes.
Mm.
And I was like, well, okay. And I think it's something that I've taken even into, I think, a lot of different areas, like for work and that kind of things, where it's like that bridging that gap between being good and being great is actually just trying to refine and do the basics right. And it's, you know, even when it comes to resetting yourself, you know, like what you said, like with making mistakes, sometimes just kind of taking a breath and, you know, being like, okay, just one foot in front of the other, that approach, it helps, you know, because what you said before, mind where your mind goes, it's one thing for it to go there, but it's like, what do you do to come back, you know? For you, like, how do you refocus when you find your, because I mean, you said time and time again, you like to internalize a lot of things.
Look, I think, like, also, going on what you just said there was this big myth when I was coming through the All Blacks, or, you know, some of this mystique that, you know, people that follows the All Blacks around. And I remember going over to Argentina and doing a coaching, you know, going over there for some coaching and running some coaching courses. And, you know, what I was showing them was nothing new that they hadn't been presented. You know, I was just, you know, some of the basics of exactly what you say. We do the basics and, you know, the feedback after I presented was, we've seen a lot of that before. Is that really what you do? You know, it was like that. They thought I was holding something back. And
they were expecting you to come out with this big presentation on this is how you.
Well, they did, and then I was kind of, like, I don't know if you're, it might be before your time, but, a bit like, the Asterix and Obelix books that I used to read in school, the Gauls, and they had this magic potion that made them super, super strong, that they drank before they went to battle or had fights and things like that. It was as if they thought the Obelix had this magic potion. But I just, we're the best. We pride ourselves on being the best at the basics, and that's what keeps our error rate down, is because that's all we do. We try and be the best at doing the simple things in the game. I believe our game's a very simple game when done well, and there's certain principles that you have to adhere to, to get you the score. And and within that, there are opportunities for each individual player to show a bit of themselves, their own personal flair. Yet, the principle of the game, haven't changed, around possession, go forward, continuity, scoring points and, stopping the other team from scoring points. It's pretty simple. And they couldn't get it. They couldn't get it, but they just, really? You're just like, your brother says, we just spend a lot of time doing, basic skills. We get faster at it. We try and make less errors at it. And we just get hammer that, throughout our week and the time we get together. So when you can do that, those key moments don't seem so big. They just seem
just part of the puzzle.
It is, and that's, I suppose, that we, like, now I go back to when you say about resetting. All I do is, first and foremost around mistakes, you've got to learn from it. And then, you got to flush it, like I talk around, a lot of our younger players were holding on to mistakes for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then they're trying to make it better or to, make up for that mistake. And that leads to another mistake. And then you just get into what I call quicksand. It's like when you jump in quicksand, the more you wriggle and the more you move, the worse you get. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing around trying to fix a mistake. It's just like, don't fix it, just forget it. I understand, what did I do wrong? I'll get that right next time. And, just move on with the game. And I think that's, for me, that's how I kind of reset, is just, if I've made an error, geez, why? Okay, now I know, don't go down that path. I've got to go the other way, because, otherwise I'll keep making the same mistake. And that's what we don't want. And again, that's what I've learned. In terms of, just moving on, not getting stuck in that moment, and, again, like what I said around in lockdown, those thoughts you have when you're, have I made the right decision, or, you make a mistake in business, because I didn't know what the answer was, so I had to ask people, or I had to find areas or things on the internet. Like, we're living a different age now, so you can find the answer somewhere. And those things are probably those, that was the toughest, to not to get down on myself, because I'm a competitive person. I think that's what helped me get to where I got to in my career. So I'm very competitive, and I don't like making mistakes. I try not to. But I suppose you've got to give yourself some leeway in that.
I think you have to be very forgiving of yourself.
Yeah.
It's part of the process, really. It's almost inevitable. It's unavoidable.
Well, and also, I remember I told players, every team I've been part of, I said, right at the start, I said, you've got to be your number one fan. Mm-hmm. You've got to
back yourself.
You do. Otherwise, because if you don't, then no one else will, and then every bad thing that someone will say to you, you'll believe it, unless, and it's not, obviously there's, how far do you go with that? But I just think you've got to, I think you have to be your own number one fan, because if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. And then you're easy to get to. Then it's easy for people to put you down, and easy for the, especially in this day and age, it's easy for people to get under your skin and knock you off where you want to go. And that's a sad thing. a very sad thing for me. But that's the reality. It's just the reality, and we need to educate our young people around how, that we are worthy of everything that we get in life and what we do, and that there's always a way forward. You might not see it, but there is. You just need to talk to people. There's plenty of solutions out there for people that look. It's when people think they don't believe it, or they feel like they're closed in and there's no one around them. And that's the tough thing, that when you see people who, it's just tough watching people.
It's a big topic, that one, and I think we'll probably there's a lot of people, especially, with the age that we're in with social media, is that a great, great starting point is just, understanding who you are, what you bring to the table. Mm. But then, when you rock up with that, it doesn't really matter what other people think, with in terms of what, where your strengths are, what you're doing, all that kind of thing. And it can be a very difficult place to be in, especially with COVID, and naturally there's more people spend more time on their screens and then that kind of stuff. And it's definitely not a confidence booster in some sense, but
talking to Artie, Artie Sevier on our first one, at a moment when, like I said, that was at the start of, where I started in terms of business, and, there were a lot of thoughts going through my head around, geez, am I made up for this, or have I made a mistake, or, but talking and, while we started the podcast, I was meant to ask people, what are they going through, people that have been, I think one thing I like is I ask people who've walked the path that I'm trying to walk, rather than, so talking to Artie, who's confidence, and he understands, walk your, live your own truth, and that that kind of, you don't have to, he had dreams of being a businessman and and rugby, and he's doing that, and he's doing a great work in our community, and leading that, but live your own truth also. And that was kind of, sometimes it's just things like that, uplifting, feeling that you want, and trying to make an impact. That's what he said too. You're trying to make an impact. He says, we are trying to make impact on, our communities and those people around us and those people we influence, to sometimes have to step out of their comfort zones and follow that lead. And it's within them, it's just within us all. And, it doesn't matter who you are, you still have doubts. I don't think that's
natural.
It is natural. Like those things are just that kind of kept me going, everything from throughout the, these last 3 months, have kind of just all come in. I'm a big believer in timing, so getting those, those moments, those comments, and, really just kept me going, and gave me confidence to get up the next day, or get me going for another week, and, gave me some purpose around, where I want to be going. I think that's been awesome for me, and that learning, I've still got a long way to go, but at least now I kind of feel, again, I go back, I just got to keep believing in yourself, and, I've got a lot of people that I can turn to now and who've done what I'm doing, and also who've done it before. Getting those experts, who know what business is about, because that's the world I'm in, and making sure that, I'll take what they have on. And for me, I'm making sure I take what they have on, but I still want to make sure that I'm not, I'm keeping true to myself. I'm keeping true to where I want our business to go. I'm keeping true to our values. I just overlay that, all that information over, who are we, what are we getting it for? What do we want to, what do we want to be? How do we want to be seen? Those kind of things. And it kind of keeps me on the right path.
Do you think you you kind of have like a map in your mind about which like where you want to go, or do you kind of play it by ear in terms of the direction, not even just for you and, you know, you and Rochelle as a team, but, you know, for the business in the next few coming years?
Yes, like we do have a plan. We do have a direction. Rochelle's very much around, you know, plan and process. She's very good at that. I like knowing at the end where I want to go to, because that's the, you know, if that's where we're going to go, I say, we could go that way. Well, who knows what's going to happen? I suppose, again, through my rugby career, having a lot of different coaches, I've learned to be very adaptable, because everyone, you know, you come in contact with, especially as a coach, you know, like they have different views. They have different views on you. They have different views on your teammates. They have different views on where, you know, they see the team going. And that can be difficult sometimes, you know. Sometimes you create a great culture. You're just not within the team, and things are within the team are good. You're just not performing, or you're not getting the results. And, you know, as I said before, you know, like, coaches get the brunt of when you're losing. When you're winning, it's the players. It's everything they've done, you know. So
it's like parenting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's right. Like, but I understand that. You know, that's the game we're in. And like I said, as a player, I had to be very adaptable, because, you know, you have different coaches, so you got to make sure that what you bring is what he wants. Because, you know, in the end, he's the one that makes the decision. So, you know, I suppose it's like business, you know. What's your value proposition to the business? You like my talk?
Yeah. Although, I see what you did there.
You know what I mean?
No, but it's like, you know, for what you just said, you know, it's a common theme that's come across pretty much most of the episodes. It's those transferable skills. It's being able to recognize those common patterns, those common traits and skill sets, and applying them in a new setting. And that's, you know, you're talking value proposition, that's exactly it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, just the language, you know, learning the whole new language of business, and, you know, like, yeah, the transferable skills. I think there's a lot of things, and we've been through another podcast around, you know, all those skills that I think other guests have let us in on, and some of them that you didn't even know that you used, but it was just natural that within, you know, one context, you were used to using them every day. And then you come into this new world and you actually, is that what that is? Is that what that's used for? Oh, okay. But, I think those things, we've got to make sure that we do transfer those and understand that. But again, it's just knowing your lay of the land, you know. You've got to get in it to understand it, to know it, and then you'll realize, oh yeah, I can bring this over. This fits here, this fits there, and I'm still doing that now.
I mean, what was it like for you transitioning from a player to a coach role? You first dipped into a coaching role back in, was it 2006?
I think 6 or 7. Seven?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I went to France. So I finished with Wellington, was my last game. And then I went over to, and I became coach in Toulon in France. So, you know, it was funny. I didn't really know what I, you know, it wasn't something that I was looking for. I was in terms of.
Just stumbled,
you know,
upon?
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, like I keep telling, you know, what we're talking about now is, you know, have a plan, but I didn't have a plan. I just kind of, that sounds good. You know, again, I go back to being adaptable. So I say, yeah, that sounds good. I'd had nothing planned, but, you know, that sounds nice. And I'd played a couple of months in Toulon the previous year. So yeah, it was a beautiful place, great weather, great people, fanatical crowds. I really loved it. And the culture, it was awesome, and we learned so much. So, and it was really, I didn't realize there was, you know, a city outside of Wellington, you know, that I thought I'd live and die in Wellington. You know, that was my home, and, you know, where I played my heart out for everyone, and where all my family was, and
I saw that video that the one from 91.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Oh, for anyone who's listening, I'll make sure I pop that onto the page so you can have a view of that one.
Yeah.
of young Tana 1991. I don't think I wasn't even born then.
No, 91. Come on, I wasn't 81. I'm not that old.
Wainumata,
and you know, my family still live there. My wife's family, you know, father still lives there, and it was a great place to live. Yet, you know, going to France, Côte d'Azur, you know, in the south of France where it actually doesn't rain. You know, you can always say it's the first time that I could, you know, book in a barbecue 2 weeks in advance. You know,
not
worry about the weather. but yeah, we loved it. And I learned a lot around coaching there. You know, just getting out of a player, that transition. I don't know. I'd kind of been coaching towards the back end of my career. I'd been helping the coaches in terms of, you know, strategies and you know, game plans. I was probably sometimes a more senior playing at the high level than some of the young coaches that I'd had coming on. So, you know, I'd always have a good relationship with the coaches in terms of trying to help them, or I thought it was a good relationship. They might have just felt intimidated by me I better talk to him, otherwise, you know, we need him to do this or help us with this and get him on side, you know, those kind of things. But, you know, I just felt, I didn't mind having my say. And I was at a stage too where, you know, I was in my mid-30s, so I didn't mind. I just said it anyway.
Can't be too bad.
No, that's right.
Can't be too bad going to Southern France.
No. So, going into the coaching, it was coaching in a different language. We loved it. And it was just a whole different kind of environment. You know, the French rugby at that stage, very physical. And they enjoyed their rugby. It was just, you know, like dealing with different players, you know, who hadn't been brought up the way I'd been brought up in rugby. So, it was hard. Invariably, you know, I had some good players around me early on, so it made that job easier. And then 12 months later, all those players left and it was just me I was probably one of the most experienced. And then I ended up playing again, which, I think I said it at the start, I could still play. I kind of retired because I wanted to. And when I came back, it was, you know, we weren't going through a good time. You know, our club was, we were languishing at the bottom. So we needed a bit of leadership. So I thought I'd rather do everything I could for us not to get demoted. You know, that was, that's what I wanted. So I thought, I'll play. And, you know, we ended up staying up. And I did that a couple of times. You know, I just like coming out of retirement after they'd done pre-season. So I didn't have to go through all the pre-season training. I hated training. But look, as a player, there was a lot of things that were probably, I thought, were positive because I kind of knew where everyone was coming from. I just finished playing, so I had a bit, you know, all the players kind of respected me straight away because they knew, you know, what I'd done. You know, I'd captained the All Blacks and I'd come from some successful programs, and that probably gave me a bit more, you know, leeway between some of the, you know, than coming in just as a coach. But that only lasts so long, you know. You've got to try and offer things and try and make players better. And, you know, one thing in France, though, it's a pretty volatile environment there where, you know, players come and go, owners, you know, make decisions that sometimes they don't talk to coaches and, you know, they
just make decisions
off the cuff. And, you know, so it can be a bit tougher, not what you're used to. And that's probably one thing I learned. And what I told to all players that were thinking of coming to France is, like, when you leave New Zealand, you leave everything, remember. And it's not just, you know, you're leaving, you know, beautiful Aotearoa and your families, and that you're leaving all the safeties of what rugby gives you in New Zealand. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, that, you know, like safety in your job, you know, like you don't hear about players getting cut from their contract halfway through the year here, you know, but that happens, that can happen. And when I was there, this happened a lot. So, you know, all those kind of things, you know, the comforts that you get used to. And then there's a big expectation over there too that you go over there. You know, the bigger the name, the bigger the expectation, obviously.
I was just going to ask, was there a bit of imposter syndrome? Like, especially moving in, you know, what you said about there's a bit of expectation that, you know, and naturally given that, you know, not only were you an All Black, but you're the captain of All Black, that...
Yeah, look, I don't think it was imposter syndrome because transitioning from rugby to business, definitely, there was imposter syndrome. Mm. But I suppose going from player to coach, not really. It was, As I said, for me, I was kind of helping with the coaching role, you know, when I was playing. So I had an idea, you know, of what I should be doing. Had some great coaches that I learned from anyway. So I was just putting that in place. But then, you know, helping some young players or some players who'd come over and make sure that, you know, when you come over, they sign the All Black. They don't sign the club player, you know. So they expect that All Black performance every time you play, not the club player that you, you know, when we go back to club, or, well, I've done it myself, you go back to club and you probably don't play as, you know, as hard as you would sometimes when you've played in some tests because, you know, the standard's not the same.
Yeah.
But, you know, over there, they watch, you know, like, oh, I watched him run through five players and his highlights on this over here, he's not running through anyone. And then, well, how come on, mate? What's, I didn't pay for that.
What's going on here?
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, so it's the, what they call, you know, it's value for money. I paid again.
Oh, I see what you did there.
So it was good, like, you know, yeah, some big learnings over there, you know, and we loved our time, and I still have friends over there, and, you know, I keep a track of how, you know, RCT's doing, and which is, you know, that's our club, that was the club Toulon, and, yeah, they had some amazing times, amazing players, you know, I've had some on my podcast through, you know, like, those are the experiences, like, you'd never thought you'd play with players from other countries that you'd played against. And, you know, having that experience overseas, that's what you get. You know, you get to, you know, like, I never would have thought I played against Johnny Wilkinson, you know, a few times, and, you know, like, all that he's achieved overseas, you know, Philippe Contemponi and, you know, some other great, Victor Matfield, you know, but they played in a, you know, and then you go overseas and then you're all in the same team, and then you actually get, from you're such an awe of them when you play against them, but when you're with them, like, yeah, it's like anything else. Oh, it's just like us.
Yeah.
Oh, he's, yeah, you know, and they're good guys, and, you know, so I suppose, you know, I suppose everyone says that when you meet someone, but yeah, that's the, I think, the beauty of the experience of playing rugby overseas, you know, it's the beauty of the game and sports in general, but rugby especially. You know, you go over, you meet different people, but they're rugby people. So the, you know, rugby environments are pretty similar wherever you go. And yeah, and you just get a different appreciation of their thinking of the game. Look, I've got a great appreciation of, you know, that helped my coaching, obviously, with Johnny. You know, over here, I had a huge respect for the kicking game, you know, that I didn't have before leaving because I wanted to run everything as a back. So, you know, that was the Hurricanes mantra, you know, expect the unexpected, and we threw it around, and I'm sure we made a lot of people angry, but we made a lot of people happy too. And but we didn't get, the championships and things like that. But maybe that was something that I learned, actually, you know, there's got to be a balance to this game, you know, and, you know, that's what I kind of took out and I brought back when I came back.
I mean, you know, everyone has their role models, you know, and for you growing up, even to you now, who did you look up to, you know, either just overall or in rugby growing up and then versus now?
My role model was my brother, you know, that's, he was my hero. He's a little bit older than me and I used to follow him around, you know, watched his rugby. I was his ball boy when he used to play down at our local rugby club, and I followed over. I followed him when he switched clubs to Petone, and you know, and I wanted to play with him. That was kind of my goal, and then I did that, and then he left. You know, he followed his own truth and went overseas and played rugby, and he's been overseas for years now. You know, ever since. You know, and now his son's playing professional rugby and has represented England. So, you know, like it's, I think he taught me a lot. Again, you know, and I kind of lived in his shadow for a long time, you know, because I followed him through schools and, you know, it's like teachers knew who he was. So I got a, you know, and I felt cool. Oh, you know, Mike's brother, you know, and Mike's brother. and then, you know, through the clubs and in terms of, you know, the players I played with when I went to play rugby league too, you know, they knew my brother. Oh, yeah, he's... So, you know, I was kind of like, it was awesome, you know, and then we got to play. That was a dream come true when we played against each other. So played with each other. And then it was, you know, then we played against each other. That was a tough thing. And I always say, you know, he was playing for Samoa at the time. And one of my best friends was playing for Samoa, Ilva'a. He was playing for the Samoa at the same time. And we were doing the haka, the Sibutau, and I was staring at both of them. You know, I was kind of wound myself up for that game because of those two. And I wanted to have them. And it was, I suppose it's what my determination to show that everything that he had taught me, I was going to give to him. You know, I was going to, out of respect, I was going to give him everything I had, and I wasn't going to take a step back. And that was my thought around it too. And that, like, you know, when you, I always say, it was very, as a role model, as a one of my heroes, it was someone that I could talk to. You know, that was kind of the difference, rather than having someone I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, and or, you know, one of those legends that you can't talk to at all. I could talk to mine. You know, he gave me, you know, I could have had an opportunity to play for Samoa with him, which is what I really wanted to do, but he said no. You know, I'd played New Zealand Colts already, you know, got my foot in the door. He says, look, you know, you never know where that might go. Look, you've already got a foot in the door. Stay with that. And, you know, I ended up playing a couple of years later for the All Blacks. So, you know, those things I'll never forget. And obviously always thankful for them. My brother and I are pretty, obviously, like, we're tight. So we talk quite often. But, yeah, you know, those things, I think that was the fortunate thing for me, like I keep saying, is that I could talk to him all the time, my hero, you know. Obviously, you know, your typical Michael Jones and things like that were my heroes. They were heroes as well, but he was the kind of the sounding board I always had. Having my sisters, you know, like I got three older sisters, and one of them's very sporty as well, and Janice. So, you know, we used to bounce a lot of the ideas off. I'd get talk to her, or she'd just give me her advice anyway.
Anyway.
You know, leave me messages on my phone after games, or, you know, if I didn't sound good in the media, or, you know, like, she just, what'd you talk like that for? You know, we taught you better. So, but again, you know, those are things that made me better, and making sure that I was accountable, you know, that, you know, not. So our family, yeah, family was huge for me, and my wife as well. You know, she's kind of taken on that role as well, as when we got together, and, you know, making sure that, I don't get taken advantage of, because I'll just do whatever I ask. Yeah, I'll do it. You know, I don't say no often. I don't mind doing things, you know, but sometimes it goes too far. And you got to really be, it's sad, but, you know, you've got to be mindful of it in the world we're in now too. Like, people want to take advantage because something's in it for them. You just got to be mindful, I think, all that. And I find that tiresome sometimes, you know, like, I just want to trust people. You know, I just got to be trust people, man. Like, if you say that's what you're going to do, let's just do it. But,
not everyone thinks the same. And I think it's to kind of expect that, you know, just because you want the best and you mean the best for others in the way that you say things and you do things, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's reciprocated.
Yeah.
And, which sucks though, because you're right. I think it can be quite draining sometimes, you know, because you'd hope that they'd do the same, but I guess we're not. That's the reason why we're not all built the same. But Victual, you're about nine months into being and going into business. Why supplements? Why supplements? You know, there's many, many options that I think you would have done, both of you would have done so well in. Why health and wellbeing supplements?
Well, it's something that I've been taking for half my life, or more than half my life, I think 30 years now. And I started playing when I was 17. I was kind of playing in men's teams, and you know, the guys I was playing with, they were right into the gym, and so, you know, they were using supplements, and so I said, oh, what's that, you know, I'll try that. And so, yeah, oh yeah, get on this stuff. So but I couldn't, yeah, I don't need that. And then they used to train in the gym all the time, you know. This is when I was at Wainamata, playing rugby league when I was a schoolboy, and I made the premier team when I was 17, and, you know, like, so you try and do what they're doing. They're in the gym for ages. They love the gym. And then they realized that I didn't like the gym, and then they realized that I was a nuisance, because all I do was ask questions and talk and just sit on the bench and gossip, really. You know, I said, oh, you go make a shake, or you go do this, you know. So they just give me little jobs as the youngster hanging around. So, you know, that was when I was 17. And so I've been taking supplements, like I said, for probably 30 years, over 30 years now. And it's just something like, it started with my wife. She was into skincare, and, you know, she was using, looking at different ways, you know, as she was getting older but still beautiful, you know, as an aged, I think. So, you know, but I don't know, I keep telling her, why does she need that, and why does she spend so much money on it? But, you know, that's what she likes. But she was making her own, and she was experimenting with New Zealand native ingredients, you know, which we've got in our products. And then I kind of said, what about me? You know, like, what about something we can do? You know, like, she, you know, her friends are telling her, oh, she should try and turn that into a business. And, you know, so she, my wife's very good at researching, you know, she doesn't go into things she doesn't know about. So, you know, the skincare was a little bit harder to get into in terms of, you know, getting all the required, you know, what you needed to get a business started, supplements a little bit easier. So we kind of went into down that avenue, and, you know, this is where we are, and, you know, with our New Zealand native ingredients and Pacific ingredients with kava and horopito and manuka and kānuku leaf, you know, that's kind of where it started. And also, we're vegetarians. So, you know, I've been taking, you know, in the last, I think we're nearly 4 years now, we've been vegetarians, and that was a health decision. And, yeah, finding nice vegan protein powders and super greens, tasting, you know, if when it tastes nice, it's pretty hard, very hard. Mm. And we haven't found one, so we decided to make our own.
The trade-off thing.
Yeah, well, that's right, eh?
The nicer it is, the less good.
You know, and that's something, that's why we decided with it, you know, that's why we ran with it. And another reason. And, you know, we've been on the, through the whole process from the start, when, you know, we were trialing, having some taste tests, and some of it wasn't good at the start, you know, as you do when you're, you know, the first two batches, and then it got better. I think we've probably got to around 8 or 9, you know, different formulations, and, you know, to what we've got now. And we think we're very, you know, proud of it. So, and it's something that I've always taken an interest in my health, my own personal health, you know, obviously because of, you know, being an elite sports person, you know, trying to make sure that my body, you know, that's the tools of your trade. You look after your body, like, obviously you'll play better, you'll last longer, and you can get more out of it. So, I always was wondering, and, you know, looking, who's doing what, you know, what's this, you know, when things came through our trainers, and, you know, try this. Try it. No good, don't like that. My body, and I'm very big on too, you know, what suits me that might necessarily not suit everyone, but I've got to do what my body, you know, my body will tell me if it likes it or not. Mm. So, you know, that was probably, you know, the big reason why we got into, you know, the health supplements, and we use them to this day, you know. And I think that's probably, you know, turning vegetarian for us, for me, when I made the decision, my wife followed me, was that, you know, like, people of my age were passing away, and, you know, a lot of it was because we're just getting too big, You know, as a Pacific Islander, our attitudes to food, you know, it's great. It's celebrated. Everything we do is around food. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we just got to change our attitude to how much we consume. But it's tough. Like, it's not easy. I'm not saying I can, because, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, but it's hard. And trying to help people to, you know, change those attitudes and to do it for not, you know, obviously we're, it's like anything, you know, you're like, what do you do for things for? Well, I want to be around for my kids. I want to be around for my grandkids, you know. And, mm. you know, seeing some of my friends pass away that had young children, who they'll, you know, they won't be able to do that. Mm. You know, that was the catalyst for me to make those decisions. So, you know, again, you know, that this, and I'm just a big believer in, you know, we've got to look after our health. Hey, health is wealth. I think that's the thing.
It's the cornerstone. It's the pillar for, you know, almost every other aspect of your life. You know, when your foundations are right, you exercise, you feel better. You're more of a nicer person. you get more done. You tend to be more productive. And no, definitely. And I think the 4 years that was because when we first met, I had no idea. I think when you guys just out of the blue mentioned, oh, you're a vegetarian, I was like, oh, you know, and then you said, oh, for 4 years, I was like, wow, that's commitment.
Yeah, it's like people don't expect it, you know, they don't expect it. And well, I suppose people that know me, I have an ability where I can make a decision and I'll just go with it. You know, and then I'll commit to it. And I think that's what my kids get. They get angry at me about it, like, because I did it. I says, well, Dad, no one's like, you know, you could just say, go, I'm going to give up this week. And, oh, yeah, I've done, I can do that. And, you know, and it is just through that resilience that you build as a sports person through the ages, you know, it's just. It does get tough on that aspect, but I probably have developed that over time, you know, and to be able to, you know, don't get me wrong, I've had some weaknesses where, I'll go back and have some, you know, when I see, because our kids aren't vegetarian, so, you know, we see some meal, we still have to cook meals or see, you know, like they still eat meat and we cook meals and they cook meals now, so that's great. But again, you know,
in the face of temptation.
Yeah, which I think is good too. Like, you know, it's just testing yourself, eh? Like, you just, for me, I just keep testing myself to, you know, can you do it? Can you hack it or, you know, or not? I haven't developed that with sugar yet. So, I still haven't been. I think because I gave up meat, I just seem to want sugar more. So, I probably needed to. develop something
picking,
there.
You're picking between a few evils there.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, I am, and I think we don't need them all, so maybe, you know, giving up one of them is probably a good thing.
I mean, in terms of a substitute, like, you know, from stepping away from being a player, going into coaching, and then now coaching, going to business, how do you stay, like, do you go for, like, walks, exercise, bit of jiu-jitsu,
You know, not many people knew I did. I was a vegetarian. Not many people did. I've been doing jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I got into it in 2009. Yeah, it was just something to keep my mind going. I'd read about it. I've had some friends in Wellington that kind of started me on it, and you know, my hairdresser was one of them. Tony from Jam, I better mention him. And then, you know, he took me to his club, and I met some other rugby players that I played footy with, and they had actually taken it up. And then I went to France. This is when I was still in France, so I came home. We always came home for a period of time to see family, and then I'd go back a bit earlier. And so when I went over, I kind of joined a club. No one spoke English there, so I just, you know, just. Again, it's that thing, I just rocked up. I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to do it. Didn't know anyone. And, yeah, I've been doing it on and off since, you know, 2008, 2009. And that's probably been something that, one, I love the ethos of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu well, you know, and what it was, you know, in terms of a big thing is, like, there's no ego, so you got to leave your ego at the door, because if you train with ego, you'll get hurt. you know, and the whole idea about it is not to get hurt, you know, not to hurt your training partner. You know, you can learn to hurt people, but once you understand that it's there because of for self-defense, then, you know, that's not probably the primary reason I do it, you do it. And I'm a hobbyist, you know, there's competitors and I've tried that. I'm probably no good at it, but I'm a hobbyist. You know, I just go, I talk to, you know, it's like when I go, I train hard and I catch up with people from different walks of life. They, you know, we all come in, like, you have to get changed into a gi, you know, so that's the traditional kind of kimono and the what you need to wear. And so you don't know what that person does for a living or, you know, and I quite enjoy that. So you just talk, and then the next thing you realize, oh, yeah, there's CEOs, you know, there's, you know, construction workers, you know, we've got film, but we've got, you know, film TV producers. You know, there's, who else? I go to the morning class, and a lot of times we just go there and talk.
You know, just the opportunity to put on a new suit, you know, do something a bit different that, you know, I see what you mean, the attraction to it. Yeah. It seems a bit left field, but because it exposes you to a different, you know, way of thinking, way of living, and getting to meet those different types of people. Yeah.
And you're learning something new. You know, the art of Brazilian jiu-jitsu is great. Like, I think it's because it's a thinking. They say it's like, you know, grappling chess. You know, it's like a chess game because you need to understand every movement that you're making could either put yourself in harm or you can harm someone else. So you need to understand, you know, so you need to, when you're in, if you're about to get in harm's way, you need to get out of it. And as I said before, if you're too slow of getting out of harm's way, all you need to do is tap and let your partner know, oh man, you got me, you know, and then you can train again. And then, you know, that's the whole ego thing, you know, those that come in and think they got to try and win everything. You usually get hurt. So it's kind of, again, it goes back to that. It's okay to fail because you'll learn from it. You know, you might lose a little training session there, but, oh yeah, what have I learned from that? I don't get in that position again. I say, okay, sweet. So I'll go back into it, you know? And then yeah, it's the understanding of that too. You know, like, shucks, yeah, I might have stuffed up, but it's not fatal. And I think that, again, you can, you know, cross that over into life. And I'm fortunate. I've got I train at Cerezo BJJ, you know, and they're good people. He's a good man, you know. He's a businessman too, you know. So you know, we kind of share ideas around that. And like, since I've been doing this, but that's kind of like both my physical and mental health. So I do that, and I think I also, you know, I don't mind doing a bit of walking with my wife and. I do my own gym sessions. I'm renowned for being what they call a secret trainer because I don't like training in people's eyes, you know. I kind of, it's one of those things that I learnt when people, people don't think you're training, they think you're taking it easy. So they might take it, so they take it easy, and then all they realize, oh, what have you been doing? You're fitter than we thought. Nah, not much. I just been lying on the couch.
Just a little bit.
So, yeah, it's just one of those things. But, yeah, and I think that's important, especially at my age, you know. If you don't use it, you lose it. And I don't want to lose it just yet.
In terms of, you know, I think what you said about giving advice when you've walked the walk, I think probably in this case, the best advice that you can give for those who are looking to pursue a professional rugby career, what kind of advice would you give to our, you know, younger listeners?
It's not just the physical part of rugby, you know, that there's actually the mind, the mental side of it. When you get to, you know, certain levels, you'll realise that the physical and the mental kind of switch places. You know, at the start it's all physical and you play the game because you love it and you're just doing what you do because that's what you did in your backyard. And then as you get to the higher end, you know, the elite status, it kind of switches because everyone does the same physical training as everyone. You still got to do, you know, the physical training, don't get me wrong, and, you know, it's at probably, you know, to another level. But every international, every professional team does pretty much the same thing, you know, to get you there. And so it's your mental fortitude to understand how you're going to push yourself to get the most out of yourself. And then it's also how do you handle pressure? Because that's, you know, and we go back to what we talked about before. Now, how do I handle pressure and that and the toughest moments where, you know, I can't make mistakes, you know, I can't, you know, not execute what I'm meant to be doing because people are relying on me, you know, and, you know, to keep calm in those situations. You know, that's, I think everyone says, you know, it's the top 2 inches once you get to our level and you understand the game better. You know, and try and grow that, you know, try and understand, you know, they call it game sense. We talk about it a lot, you know, you've got to grow the understanding of the game because, you know, it does become a more of a mental factor than a physical one, you know, at the elite level.
And then in a reverse sense, given that you're now in a learning position, what so far, what business advice have you received that you were like, you know what, this has really helped me?
Oh, geez, there's been so much. Oh, look, I'll go back to, you know, Artie, and it's really along those lines because everyone's probably told me, you just got to do it. You just got to do it. And yeah, you'll make mistakes, you know, ask people. But in the end, you've just got to do it yourself. You know, like that's, you know, like I said, Artie said, you know your truth, be yourself. And I think that's probably the big thing, like asking for help, you know, that's difficult because I don't want to look like I'm don't know or I'm dumb or, you know, things like that. Or some of the questions I ask are, I think I just spoke, you know, but for me, I just, sorry, for clarity, just for me to get clear, can I, you know, I just kind of go back to that. I just really need clarity.
I've got a good kind of idea, but I just need you to clarify that for me.
That's right. You know, just break it down a bit more for me, please. Yeah. So I think ask questions and in the end, you've just got to do it. Don't be, you know, like, I think everyone's got ideas and everyone wants to, then they, I might be too hard, you know, but yeah. Get good people around you, ask good questions or ask questions no matter what, and then just do it.
What you just said before about, you know, putting your ego aside, that's what it is, you know. Yeah. So I guess that your jujitsu helps with that, with your business mindset.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but life's full of contradictions, like, you know, when I first learned jujitsu, no ego, no ego. And then I went to a seminar, a very prominent jiu-jitsu man, he says, man, you've got to have an ego. That's because otherwise how would you, you know, want to get far in life, you know, how, you know, because you've got to have that inner drive to want to be the best at something, you know, or want to be better yourself. Or so there is an element of ego in life, you know, and ego in what you do. It's just understanding where that fits, you know. Is it ego that's going to drop you off a cliff, or is that an ego that's going to actually, I've got to stay the course, or I'm, you know, that pushes you towards your purpose, or you know what I mean?
I mean, they say that that's what maturity is. It's actually not really growing up in the sense, but just picking your battles, knowing when to.
Yeah, and it's based off, you know, your values too. You know, like I've learned a long time ago too, like, trust your gut. You know, just trust it, because that kind of tells you, you know, how you're wired. And so if something doesn't sound right, it's probably not, and it doesn't feel right, probably not. And you've just got to trust that. And it's, yeah, that sometimes that's hard and something new, you know, like business, because I don't know a lot, it doesn't feel right, but doesn't that probably, you know, that doesn't mean it's not right. It just means I don't probably know enough, you know. And then again, that's where that asking the question, so can you tell me that again, please, and how that, you know, educate. So you just got to educate yourself.
Couple of times now, but tell us that again.
Okay. For the third time, Tana.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, on our post that we'd put up, we'd asked, you know, followers to, you know, ask questions that they'd want to hear you answer. So we've got a few here. Probably don't have time any more time to go through all of them, but also forgive me if I mispronounce, you know, your name or handle, but this one, we've got one from Palu Dog. Were you nervous when you first became All Blacks captain and leading the haka?
I was probably more nervous leading the haka than I was becoming All Black captain. Becoming the All Black captain was obviously something that I didn't expect, but something that came with a lot of responsibility. And it took me a couple of days to go back with, you know, and accept it, because I had to think about all that, all those things that come with it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't so much nervousness. It was, oh, now you have to do all this media. You have to do, you know, I looked at all the other things outside of the, you know, that comes with that kind of responsibility. But with the haka, it was the first time again that, you know, someone outside of, someone being Māori, that had led it. And I knew how much, how important it was, and what the haka meant to not just myself, but, you know, Māoridom and our country. And so I talked to a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's like anything. Hey, if you're going to do something, you want to do it right. So I talked to some friends, you know, Māori friends, who just slowed down. You know, that was probably the best advice from one of my friends, Slippy Sinnott, you know, and he just said, just slow down, you know, don't, you know, and I was thinking, yeah, you know, what are the ideas? Like, yeah, just get through it quick as. But again, I got some good feedback through it, and but yeah, that was probably new. I didn't even leave my room, I think, that whole week, because I was going through it in my mind. You know, I couldn't even tell you what our game plan was that week, because I think I was only thinking about the haka.
No, definitely. Next question, Tangi Waikari, what strategies have you used to get through the tough times? I guess both in, you know, personal sense, but then also rugby sense.
Look, I think, as you've said it, I tend to internalise things a lot. So spending, you know, going for walks during lockdown really helped me. And it was a time for me to go out and think, you know, some of the issues, breathe through, you know, the concerns I'd had, or you know, some of those negative feelings that I had. And that's something that I've used through footy as well. I think I talk about, I have some full-on conversations with myself, you know, my negative self, and, you know, me trying to, you know, talk through those, you know, and I usually come out on getting on top of those, just being able to, you know, walk them through my head, talk them through with myself. And that was probably a strategy I learned when I was in the All Blacks, you know, that self-talk, from you know, handling those negative thoughts, but also positive talking. As I said before, being your number one fan, you know, going into games, and I felt that I took myself into, you know, I'm gonna do something big this week. I'm gonna do this, you know, I'm set some goals for myself for this game, and I'm gonna do that. And I could tick those off when I came in, you know. And I think once I, you know, it's something that I've, now it's just part of who I am, you know, and it's probably worked well in terms of my, you know, understanding how to get through some errors that I've probably created, and, you know, and some tough questions or tough positions that I've been in terms of, you know, both rugby life and, you know, and what we're doing now, and, you know, again, trying to get through those, just work through them myself, and come out and be better for it.
No, definitely. Next, from Tom Bosmer. I'm a really big fan of you and your passion of the haka. My question is, do you play an instrument?
I wish I could play them. I learned to play the guitar. I tried to learn to play the guitar when I was away on tours a few times, and I never got really good. I could just drum for a little bit, and then Nehemia Tialata, he was an amazing guitarist, and he kind of put me off because I couldn't be that good. So I put down the guitar, and then I tried to learn this thing called the saxmonica, which is a kind of, yeah, you know, you between will. A harmonica and a saxophone. So, but then
you thought you'd change it up.
Yeah, change it up. So I like it, but, you know, then my kids said it was too, I was so bad that they got sick of listening to me, so they told me to stop.
And last one from, actually, this one here is, as a player, what did you expect from a coach? And then as a coach, what did you expect as a player?
From a player, what I expected from coach was just, you know, just honesty and, you know, give it to me straight. I just wanted to know what I needed to do to be the best I could be. And I'd rather you just tell me what you thought, and then I'd work on, and I can, you know, try and work on, you know, obviously rectifying those issues. Some of the best coaches I felt like support. I wanted support from the coach. You know, if after that honesty, if things didn't go well, then you know, let me know. And you know, the coaches that I remember, they're the ones that kind of believed in what I did. You know, and you know, they could see something in me, and they just kept driving me to be, you know, to try and reach that potential. As a coach from a player, it's probably, I always say, you just want a player that, you know, that doesn't know it all. Like I can't teach, I can't teach someone that knows it all. So coachability, you know, willing to take on, you know,
feedback,
you know, whether it's positive or negative, and making sure that you take the time to come on your own game too. Like, I pushed hard around, well, what do you think? You know, some of this feedback. And so you actually get a gauge on where they're at. And then, you know, I find that's great, because if you get an idea where they think they are, you know, you can grow from there and obviously let them know, hey, we're probably not that right there right now. I believe you're here, you know, from my experience, and this is why. And, yeah, I think those are probably the key things, eh? You know, like coachability is huge.
Yeah, I guess even outside of just being a professional athlete in any learning role, I mean, that's one of the things that I've said from when we first met, is that, you know, you and Rochelle's willingness to take on feedback and actually ask for that feedback, because it's not an easy pill to swallow, you know, especially if you're used to being in a rhythm of, you know, you're seen more as an expert, and then switching into starting from scratch. But it's been an actual honour to be able to join you on this podcast, especially, you know, celebrating the last episode for the season. Even these last few months, just being on that journey with you guys, it's been one hell of a learning experience, I think, for both parties, but definitely wouldn't have it any other way. And I think some exciting things to expect from next year for sure.
Look, I think likewise, well, what you do and add to, you know what we're doing, especially around that social media space, is you saved me some headaches, or, you know, a lot of those discussions I said about, you know, that I had with myself, a lot of them were around what I should be doing social media wise or what I had to push. So no, you've added great value to what we're doing now. So Mel, so thank you for that. And so I probably wish everyone a, you know, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and, you know, all the best for 2022, because I'm looking forward to it, because I've pretty much had enough of 2021 now.
Really, just ready to hit the reset and start on the new year. Yeah,
that's it.
No, definitely. Do we have last thing before we round off? Do we have any exciting things coming up for next year? Or
yes, well, we have decided that we're going to have a season two. You know, with Tanerumanga's team talk, so we'll be back in the new year. We've got some guests that have already confirmed that they'd come on. You know, hopefully we'll try and find some time where we'll get Eugene Behrman, who coaches City Kickboxing Fighters, before Izzy's fight, and you know, like, we'll try and get Sonny Bill. You know, he said he'll come on. So, you know, we've got got some good ones lined up after that as well, who've branched out and, you know, doing some good things. And hopefully we'll give some good lessons to our listeners and insight into, you know, what these sports people do, and also trying to look after themselves for, life after sport.
No, awesome. Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. Stay safe and have a great rest of 2021.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, love it.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out Victual's website at www.victual.co.nz so you can rebalance your lifestyle with ancient wisdom and ingredients.